I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
We're going to turn now to the prospect of more hostages being freed today from the Gaza Strip. It comes after 10 Israelis and 2 Thai nationals were brought back into Israeli territory yesterday. In return, Israel released 30 Palestinian prisoners. The exchange with Hamas happened after both parties agreed on Monday to extend the humanitarian pause for an additional 2 days. The truce is now set to expire tomorrow. The terrorist group has freed 81 people since the temporary ceasefire began on Friday, while Israel has released 180 Palestinian prisoners. It is believed about 240 people were taken captive during the October 7th terrorist attack in Israel. The White House says 8 or 9 Americans are still being held hostage.
And of course, that's the balance that's underway right now between Hamas and Israel. How do we get more prisoners released and yet also exterminate Hamas? Every passing day, this drip, drip, drip of prisoners being released is giving Hamas more opportunity and time to regear, relocate, replan what they might be doing as the Israeli troops move in once the ceasefire actually comes to an end. Ceasefire, pause, however you want to call it. Bullets are not being fired at each other right now. But Hamas knows the moment that it's decided we're not going to give you any more prisoners, hell will break loose again up on Gaza. And Israel's itching to do it, but at the same time, the balance of lives that they might still be able to get out that are being held prisoner. And, of course, they're also concerned about the civilians inside Gaza who've not been part of any of this except collateral damage. And the death count has ranged from 12 to 14,000, according to Hamas, killed by the Israeli attacks. You can't really take that number as a fact to say that it was done by Israel, but there might well be that many dead, and some of them might have been killed by Hamas as they tried to escape and go to the south to evade the bombings and constant attacks on the northern part of Gaza. Thanks for joining us again. Here we are, November. Are you looking at the calendar? My gosh, November 29, 2023. I'm glad to have you on board. We're here every day for you, Monday through Friday, from 6 to 8 p.m. And we also are putting up a stream when we're on for you at LarryConnorsUSA.com. Pardon me, not LarryConnorsUSA.com. LarryConnorsUSA Facebook and Twitter. Also, Newstalk STL Facebook and Twitter. But if you miss any of those, either live or the stream, or you want to go back and watch or listen to something again, or share with others, which I always encourage you to do, you go to LarryConnorsUSA.com. Everything will be put there for you. Now, you heard that report from Mika Brzezinski talking about waiting to see how many more hostages are going to be coming out. We're getting continuous stories as some of those who have been freed. One of the first Israeli hostages freed by Hamas is now saying she confronted the leader of the terrorist groups, or at least someone she considered to be the leader, in a tunnel under the Gaza Strip while in captivity. This is an 85-year-old Jewish woman. She told an Israeli newspaper that the hostages were paid a visit by the leader of the terrorist, Hamas terrorist, with us 3 to 4 days after we got there. And she said, I asked him, how is he not ashamed to do such a thing to people who all these years have supported peace? Very good question. her answer, he said. He didn't answer. He was silent. You know, it's very possible, even though Hamas' attitude was go and be as barbaric as you can to maybe incite Arabs all around the world to rise up against Jews everywhere, that maybe they realized, you know, we might have stepped across a line here that we're not going to get that much world support. Now, of course, on our universities and colleges, among the elite dumb idiots that we have in this nation, they're still getting some support. And there is some support for Israel to, quote, cease fire, quit shooting at all, whether or not you're going to get any more prisoners. And that's not just on our college campuses, but elsewhere, and of course, even inside our Congress with some members. An MSNBC reporter, Richard Engel, on the scene says, what happens next, that's going to be the telling event.
The big question is, what will happen after midnight tonight? Israel says that unless Hamas continues to hand over hostages, then it will resume its military campaign. And there are two groups in particular that want to see this ceasefire extended badly. They are the families of the hostages who want to buy more time, because so far this truce has been working. It's been very delicate, but generally it has been working, with each day Hamas releasing around 10 to 12 prisoners, sometimes a few more, and in exchange Israel releasing about 30 or 30 plus Palestinian prisoners. The people of Gaza desperately want this to be extended, because during this last 6 days, they've been able to get some food aid. They've been able to go to their houses. We've been able to be in contact with people. Much of Gaza is destroyed, so that their lives are still incredibly difficult. There's very little food. There's very, very little drinking water, but it is better than being under constant assault.
To that extent, it's better. And during this pause or ceasefire, whichever term you choose, no shooting going on at this point. Well, there are caravans of medical supplies, food, and water arriving. Of course, then the question is, how much of it is actually going to end up going to the prisoners and, of course, the Palestinians? Don't forget the Palestinians in Gaza. They're not all part of Hamas. Many of them would have preferred that Hamas not be there at all for what has rained down on them once Hamas carried out its October 7th attack. Of course, they don't dare say that, because the word comes back and they could be out in the street, shot in the back of the head. For a period of time, Donald Trump had John Bolton as his national security advisor. It didn't last that long between the two because of egos and everything else, possibly, and disagreements, but Bolton still is a prime source on understanding what's taking place, and he has his assessment of the game that now Hamas is playing.
Fundamentally, what's going on here is that Hamas is playing a game of psychological warfare against the people of Israel and the people of the United States as well. They're trying to distract Israel from its strategic mission of eliminating Hamas, and trying to focus on the question of the hostages, the question of the condition of civilians in Gaza. Obviously, this is a heart-wrenching situation, and you can feel nothing but compassion for the families of the hostages. But in cold fact, Israel's strategic mission here is much more important. But if the Hamas effort can help break the morale, can help break the resolve of the Israeli forces,
if they can do that, then they're gaining more ability and more support. Again, that's John Bolton on the way he sees it's going to be played out, if they can break that resolve. I don't think they're going to break the resolve, but the world community might put more pressure upon Israel. But, of course, they're not the ones surrounded by enemies that want to kill them and wipe them off the face of the earth. I want to go back to MSNBC reporter Richard Engel on the Israeli plans at this point.
As long as hostages are coming out, Israel does have an incentive to pause its military operations. Its troops are already in Gaza, and there is no talk at this stage of those Israeli troops coming out. So Israel is preparing for a long-term military campaign. Israel says that its goal is regime change in Gaza. That could take years, might never succeed, but it is not a short-term objective. So as long as the hostages are still coming out, it seems that Israel is quite happy, not happy, but quite willing to allow this process to continue. The ball at this stage is really in Hamas's court. Can it gather additional women and children from other disparate groups inside Gaza? And is it willing to make the decision to start releasing men, older men, or the most sensitive group for Hamas, military age men and women, who it considers to be soldiers.
And we'd already heard the other day that Hamas had taken some of its prisoners and given them to another terrorist group in Gaza. How many are there? And who's going to have control of them? I want to share with you a report as it's written by Breitbart regarding how these negotiations and negotiators in Qatar are dealing with releasing additional groups of Israeli hostages. Here's the way it's written. They have divided them into groups and categories like cattle, with each group to fetch a different price in the negotiation. This humiliating exercise itself is a public relations victory for Hamas. It will enable the terrorist organization to demand different prices for each group, far more than the three Palestinian terror convicts for every woman and child in the first six exchanges. The result is a process that looks more like bartering over goods and a Mideastern bazaar than a discussion about human beings. Think about that. Once again, to former National Security Advisor John Bolton, who's really benefiting.
I think on balance, in a military sense, Hamas is the beneficiary more than the Israeli side. Certainly, as you heard from your previous guest, the Israelis are going to move people around. They're going to change troops out. They're going to do a number of things. They will take advantage of the pause as well. But it's Hamas that's getting pounded here. I don't think we know the full amount of devastation that the Israeli forces have wrought, but it's Hamas that needs the break, and the longer they can make that break, the better off they'll be. I don't think people should forget that at the beginning of this war, the Biden administration sent military advisors to Israel that said, look, learn from our experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan. Don't rush in pell-mell. Take your time. This is very complicated. Using the examples particularly of Fallujah and Mosul in Iraq, which took 9 to 12 months for American and Iraqi forces to secure. We're 7 weeks into this. There's a long way to go. But if Israel's resolve can be weakened and broken, they'll never get to the amount of time they really need to accomplish the stated objective of eliminating Hamas.
Which is going to be their objective. Add to that a top CIA official posting a pro-Palestinian image on Facebook 2 weeks after the attack. A top CIA official. I'll get you more details on that in the next hour. Now, as I also told you yesterday, Hunter Biden wants to testify to the House Oversight Committee. But he has a condition, which is getting pushback already from Chairman James Comer and other Republicans.
According to Hunter Biden's attorney today, he wants to come forward, and I think that's great. Give him an opportunity. He's going to have due process. He's going to be able to answer some questions. But this isn't about Hunter Biden. This is an investigation by Congress of Joe Biden for potential corruption. Hunter Biden is a key witness in our investigation of Joe Biden. We know the Biden family has received millions and millions of dollars from our enemies around the world. We don't know what they did to receive the money.
And Hunter wants to testify in front of cameras, not behind closed doors. Republicans say no.
In an open public hearing, you see the Democrats turn this into a charade. It's 5 minutes on each side, and it doesn't allow you to get to the facts in a deposed manner. A closed-door hearing allows a legal deposition. That is the only compliance with the Republican subpoena. It allows you to follow the facts, to ask follow-up questions, and that is incredibly important when we're doing this investigative work in part of this impeachment inquiry. And my colleague, Chairman Comer, is exactly correct. This is not about Hunter Biden. This is about Joe Biden. And whether or not he is compromised. I believe he is fully compromised, and I believe that as we continue uncovering evidence, we will see that this is the greatest political corruption scandal of our lifetime. But that can only be found if we're able to follow the evidence in a closed-door deposition. And of course, we welcome an open hearing for the American people to see, but there has to be a closed-door deposition with a long-form interview with all of the witnesses.
That is New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. She is one of many voicing the same thing. In fact, we hear the same from South Carolina Congresswoman Nancy Mace.
When you sit for a deposition, there are attorneys involved, members are involved, staff are involved. You sit there for hours. It could go all day. You get a lot more information that you then can bring out during a public hearing. But he shouldn't be treated any differently than anyone else. And let's face the facts. Don Jr. sat for not one, but two depositions before Congress. So, Hunter Biden, what are you so afraid of?
So what do you want to find out from Hunter Biden? What's most important to you?
I want to know where all the bodies are buried. I want to know how these companies were created and layered, where the money was from China and how it got to the U.S., how it got to different Biden family members. Where was Joe Biden? How was he involved? What kind of bribery, the WhatsApp messages, the emails, the text messages? We'll be able to verify his accounting of all of that. And quite frankly, I think he needs to sit for more than one deposition. There's so much money that was involved here. It's incredible. But we've got to do the first step, which is the deposition
where you can ask over and over and over and not say your 5 minutes are up, stop. And the question you heard from Maria Bartiromo, what do you want to find? Want to know where the bodies are. Good question, good answer. Again, back to New York Congresswoman Stefanik.
Democrats, when they were in the majority, they demanded that there be closed-door depositions. And Jamie Raskin, who you quoted beforehand, or the reporter quoted, said it was unacceptable, for example, for Steve Bannon to appear publicly and not comply with the deposition. So now the shoe's on the other foot, and the Democrats want to wipe away their previous statement. Democrats also demanded that Donald Trump Jr. appear, and he appeared before two closed-door depositions and did the transcribed interviews. This is part of our congressional oversight, and that's going to be very important. And the only compliance is appearing before that closed-door deposition. And we're going to stand by that as House Republicans.
Well, part of the issue is your colleagues on the left want to stop Trump in any way, shape, or form, and they don't want this spotlight on the Biden family.
They don't want it on the Biden family. Well, the point is, keep in mind, Hunter's attorneys are claiming, look, behind closed doors, you guys come out and you tell us this happened and that happened when it didn't really happen. You know what? That sounds so similar to how the Democrats were holding their closed-door hearings with Nadler and Adam Schiff when everybody come out and say, oh, we got Trump this time. We're going to nail him to the wall. That's what they said, but they couldn't talk about specifics, and it all turned out to be a lie anyway. They were the ones pulling the charade. Before this hour is over, Governor DeSantis and Governor Newsom will go against each other. Sean Hannity moderating this tonight. You're asking why? Oh, that's a good question. That's coming up. But first, are Democrats ready to close the border? Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Hundreds of homeowners and businesses had or will have water main breaks. Wellington Environmental has a warning. You can clean up the water, but if you're not checking areas where the water leaked in the walls where you can't see it, you could end up exposing your family, your employees, your clients to hazardous mold. Wellington Environmental reminds you, if that mold is not detected, properly treated, removed, that is a risk, a liability you do not want. Wellington clients, including hospitals and schools, trust Wellington to make their environments safe. Call 314-644-4930. 888-344-9930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
Planning a party with family, friends, maybe a business party. Cafe Napoli has four locations, and each has rooms to fit your needs. But a word to the wise, book early. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. Also get some Cafe Napoli gift cards, good for all locations, anytime. I'll see you at Cafe Napoli.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you why pay more than four. In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today. 314-441-4444. 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
You want to give a unique gift this holiday? I suggest Stolach Whiskey, produced in Missouri. Stolach Whiskey, born of natural limestone filtered water from the Ozark Highlands, aged in Missouri oak. Stolach, so smooth. Trust me, you're going to enjoy it. So next time, ask for Stolach. Visit the website, Stolach.com. Stolach, Stolloch, from Stone Ledge Distillery.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, I think everyone in the nation realizes we have an issue at the border, and the Democrats are certainly realizing it, even in the northern blue states and elsewhere. My God, we've got illegals everywhere. Oh, they don't call them illegals. They call them migrants. And these were sanctuary cities and states saying, if you get here, we'll take care of you. Now they're saying, go away. Quit coming. There's your issue. Joining us now, the heritage expert on border security, and that'd be Laura Reese. Glad to have you with us again, Laura.
Thanks for having me on, Larry.
So I'm looking at, you guys are suggesting that H.R. 2 is the only solution to securing the border. H.R. 2 exactly would do what?
So that is the Secure the Border Act that the House passed in May and the Senate nearly passed in June, which it seems to forget. All the Republican senators who were present voted yes. One voted, with the exception of one, Rand Paul voted no, and two Republican senators were absent. But H.R. 2 would take away the four tools that the Biden administration uses to execute its open border agenda. It uses asylum fraud. The Biden administration uses mass immigration parole. It uses unaccompanied children, and it uses NGO funds to make this all happen. And H.R. 2 takes away those tools. It does more than that as well. But if the Senate is serious about wanting to secure the border, it should pass H.R. 2.
Well, now, to that extent, I know you're aware of this, but for the audience, the head of Heritage Action, your colleague Kevin Roberts, I'm quoting, House and Senate conservatives should reject the proposal that's being put in front of them and commit to supporting H.R. 2 to restore safety and security for the American people. Anything less is unacceptable. And, of course, what's being put in front of them, we want it all tied into Ukraine money And the Israeli money can be wrapped in there also.
Right. So the White House has combined all these in its supplemental requests. It includes money for Ukraine. It includes money for Israel, as well as so-called border security money. And just the last portion is $13.6 billion. But one more dollar given to this administration just accelerates its open border operations. And so Congress should not just be throwing more money at DHS and fall for that border trap, because it just leads to more insecurity. And frankly, these NGOs need to be defunded, not given another dollar.
Yeah, I have not seen anything out of that $13.6 billion to say specifically how it would help border security.
No, it gives money to operate CBP, but this administration tells CBP to process them all into the country.
So in other words, money, we're going to have you process them through faster with more people down there.
That's right. It gives more money to FEMA, which in turn gives grants to the NGOs to transport, feed, and shelter all the masses of people who are coming. It gives money to the State Department to go clear down to Panama and continue building their facilities there to receive migrants from all over the world and send them north.
And they're already cleared. That's that passive. We'll go ahead and clear you down here. You don't have to go to the border. You're already cleared to go into the U.S.
That's right. And it also gives more money to Health and Human Services to receive and shelter unaccompanied alien children, which is just a sex trafficking child labor violation pipeline that needs to be shut down.
You mentioned the NGOs. Now, that's another. Non-governmental organizations have been making tons of money off of this, and some of them are probably doing it with the right mindset of thinking they're really doing something to help. And I have no doubt, though, that a lot of them are grifting off of it.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of fraud built in. There's been Inspector General reports on this, and there's new video out there on Twitter or X today where someone in the NGO admits the fraud that's involved, so that they receive all this government money, and while they'll buy some plane tickets for migrants, they'll pocket a good chunk of the money as well. And so, yes, these groups, and a lot of them are faith-based organizations, will say, hey, we're just helping vulnerable populations. But this has become a multi-billion dollar industrial complex. And groups like Lutheran Immigration Refugee Services, in a recent year, I think received 80% of its revenue from government grants, as opposed to church donations, which is completely backwards and grotesque.
Well, we're seeing maybe a shift among Democrats. We've already seen Eric Adams and Biden. Apparently, they haven't been talking for months now. Eric Adams says, we're being inundated here in New York City. We can't handle them. And then Martha's Vineyard, they caught one again in Martha's Vineyard the other day, a convicted sex trafficker raping a five-year-old child repeatedly. And then you've got Congressman Cuellar of Texas coming right out and saying, look, we probably do need to go back to stay in Mexico for your asylum claim. Just exactly what Trump had. Go ahead.
The Remain in Mexico program was very successful. That was a game changer that ended the caravans that were coming in 2018 and early 2019. With respect to New York City Mayor Adams, apparently he's been complaining too much and too loudly to the Biden administration, and they seem to be investigating him through other means and staff to keep him quiet.
Yeah.
But while he complains about the results from his sanctuary policies, he's never changed those sanctuary policies. He's just merely asked for more federal money.
And in fact, he bussed those that came to him by bus on another bus somewhere else into the state.
Right, yeah, they keep passing the problem along. And so, frankly, we've seen some organic protests by American citizens in New York City and Chicago who have been personally and directly impacted by this. We need to see a lot more of that. And so as these mayors pass the problem on to other suburbs and towns, we need more Americans to speak up loudly and consistently and to show up and say, we can't handle these numbers. And until these politicians fear that they're going to be affected either politically, their power, or their pocketbook, they won't change course.
Going into the Thanksgiving holiday, we were told by the council director for the air marshals, there are no air marshals on planes anymore. They've all been sent down to the border, basically to help pass out water. So we have a hostage, we have a terrorist situation back in the skies again. And, of course, we have unknown number, according to FBI Director Wray, of terrorists already in the nation, and we know not where they are. In other words, at any moment, something could go upside down.
Right, and Secretary Mayorkas of Homeland Security is pulling agents from the northern border and elsewhere, too, to process even more illegal aliens into the country. And now he's so lowered the standards that he's having them do it virtually, which for those who have been around long enough, that smacked of the Visa Express program that was in Saudi Arabia that resulted in some of the 9/11 hijackers getting their visas.
So if we're going to continue to, let me bring it right down to this question. These politicians who are Democrats, they know they're getting the heat off of it. How, at what point is it going to break them or burn them or melt them down? And they realize, I can't stay on this side anymore. We're getting children raped and kidnapped. We're having children trafficked across the border, drugs, fentanyl killing people left and right. And they're going to turn and say, close the border.
Well, unfortunately, history has shown us it takes a terrorist attack because we've been living with these conditions with raped children and raped women right. and fentanyl deaths for almost 3 years now. And while some Democrats will quietly admit there's a problem behind closed doors, they're certainly not doing it publicly, with the exception of Congressman Cuellar on occasion, as you mentioned. But yes, unfortunately, I believe it's going to take a terror attack for more members of Congress to speak out publicly. And frankly, Americans shouldn't have to wait for a terror attack. We know the conditions are bad. We know what can be done to fix it. And Congress is still acting like we're living back in the 1990s.
Now, to that extent, and I'm like you, I don't want this to happen, but I certainly fear it. Let's say a major terrorist act goes down. It involves several cities all on one day in one particular time and vulnerable targets. What possibly could Democrats say then that, yeah, everything is safe and secure in our nation?
Well, they can't. And they can't with a straight face now. They're running on dumb luck. Their luck's going to run out.
And unfortunately, the American people will be paying the price for it. So what are your chances, you think, of getting H.R. 2, Secure the Border Act, actually going through?
I don't have faith in the senators, particularly the Republicans who are negotiating with themselves and trying to water it down in an attempt of do-something-ism. Which is very dangerous. And all for what? For more Ukraine money? I mean, what are they doing here?
Well, that's the whole issue. I mean, and very quickly, I mean, you had Chuck Schumer in the well of the Senate, a Jew also, saying we need $14.5 billion for Israel ASAP. And immediately Mike Johnson and his committee came forward, or House passed a bill, said here's your 14, have, but it didn't include Ukraine money, did not include more money for the border.
Well, the Democrats have long used the tactic of you need to load up any bill with carrots and sticks to get what they want. And so, of course, they're not going to just let Israel money go through on its own because that means the Democrats will lose on getting something else that they want.
Laura Reese, as always, I thank you for your time and your expertise, again, as the Director of Border Policy and Immigration for the Heritage Foundation. And I'm waiting for a day we're talking and applauding that we're actually shutting the border down again.
Me too. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Laura, very much. Wow. It's happening right in their face, in their own communities. Don't let them just wah, 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 wah. Make them accountable. Hold them accountable. Coming up, the latest numbers say there is no way anyone has a chance in a primary against Donald Trump.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beal based on your recommendation." I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in, and I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beal, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
Vincent's Jewelers has the hottest gift for the holidays. Flexible bracelets. Quality, beauty, starting at just $150. And of course you'll want to check for rings, pendants, maybe watches. I suggest you check the website each day for new items and specials. VincentsJewelers.com. VincentsJewelers.com. Give Vincent's a chance for your business. Vincent's, locally owned, supporting local charities for more than 42 years. Vincent's, my only jeweler.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA. That's a big game, man.
President Xi's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
This United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
Lit Cigar wins Best Smoking Lounge and Best Smoke Shop in the Riverfront Times Best of St. Louis listing for 2023. That is 2 years back-to-back. Lit Cigar Lounge and its new space in the district just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit is for men and women who enjoy great cigars, premium drinks. The website keeps you on top of special events, including live entertainment. LitSTL.com. LitSTL.com.
I'm chasing tail lights, straight as a crow flies, hunting just down a country road. I've got a shotgun, it's riding shotgun, and we're both fixing to unload. Son, I know what you've done. There's only one way to outrun me. You better pray.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Donald Trump will be the nominee. I'm proud to have endorsed Donald Trump. I was the first member of Congress to endorse Donald Trump, and I think the polling shows that the American people understand what a stark difference we have seen in leadership. You're seeing absolutely weak leadership on the global stage under Joe Biden. You have what I believe is the greatest political corruption scandal, the Biden crime family, and it goes all the way up to the big guy who is Joe Biden. And look at the economy, Maria. The majority of the American people no longer have faith in the American dream. 70% of the American people believe that Bidenomics, which the White House is touting, has been an abysmal failure.
Yeah.
When I talk to my constituents at home, inflation is crushing them. We just came out of the most expensive Thanksgiving meal as people go to the grocery store of our lifetimes.
Right.
So the American people are smart, and this is why you're seeing such strong polling for President Trump. And I'm proud to support him, and I'm going to work very hard to make sure that he wins next November.
New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, very emphatic that Trump's going to win. And when she starts talking about the cost of your Thanksgiving meal you just had and your gas prices and everything, you're going to hear from the Bidenomics people saying, hey, but gas prices are coming down some. Well, that's true. But compared to where you had them and where you had them before that and before that, and you still compare that you're paying now at the pump to the last year of Trump, you're still paying a dollar plus more. You happy with that? Now, Stefanik is saying that there's no way anyone's going to catch up to Trump. Let me give you some numbers here from Real Clear Politics, which is basically an evaluation of various surveys. And according to Real Clear, We're not even talking the primary now. We're talking about the general, which, of course, is the next stage. Trump leads Biden by almost 3 points. He's in a better position in polls than any GOP nominee since 2004. You remember 2004? Ended up being Bush 41, George Walker Bush versus Kerry. So he is better than any GOP nominee against a Democrat candidate since 2004. Now, again, that's the general election. You got to get through the primary. You heard Stefanik say there's nobody can beat him. He's going to end up winning anyway. And yet there's still Nikki Haley, who still is there, Vivek Ramaswamy, and you've got blowout Chris Christie. I wouldn't even bother with that anymore. And beyond that, there's really nothing. But Haley is becoming maybe a bigger obstacle. Trump has already said, I wouldn't take anybody on the Republican debate stage, the first time they had everybody there. I wouldn't take not a one of them for a vice presidential candidate. That would have included Nikki Haley. His choice of a vice president for his ticket could be really big, despite the polls I just told you as to how far he is ahead of Biden at this point. Of course, that's assuming Biden's still going to be in the race at that time. Christine Noem, governor of South Dakota, certainly likely. But Nikki Haley is one that's getting a lot of attention now. In fact, I'm looking at a piece by CNNNN, and they call it, well, basically it's titled, let me get the exact title here. I don't want to give you a false story here. The exact title is Why All the Millionaire Money is Going to Nikki or something like that. That's not the title, but it's close enough. It begins, Welcome to the New Never Trump. The 45th president's enemies on the right are mustering for a final big money showdown designed to crush his, speaking about Trump, his hopes of a third consecutive Republican nomination less than 50 days before voting starts in the GOP primary race. Nikki Haley will be the lavishly funded vessel carrying the hopes of the influential network funded by billionaire Charles Koch and top industrial and corporate donors who think Donald Trump is a risk too far next November. The article continues stating that Koch and the others, their bet is that the former South Carolina governor can succeed where busted 2016 $100 million front-runner Jeb Bush, Democrat nominee Hillary Clinton, two impeachments, old school Republicans like Mitt Romney, millions splashed by the Club for Growth and the Lincoln Project and allied groups, a 2020 election defeat, a pliant House GOP majority, and several special counsels have failed. All those things put together, they still don't apparently take Nikki Haley off the board. They make her bigger in the view of some. So Tuesday's endorsement from Americans for Prosperity Action is the latest indication that Haley, on the strength of a shrewd campaign, a new generational message, and several strong debate performances, is now the GOP establishment's favorite as the Trump alternative. Trump is still leading by I think the closest I've seen was 35 points over Haley or anyone else. Now, I think it's even bigger than that. But the question being raised even by CNNN, will this new boost of money and everything coming in make her the best finance runner-up in U.S. political history? Yeah, you spend all that money to get number two? Not what you had in mind. And I don't mean number two on the ticket. I mean number two, to be the candidate? Or can she use this money to mount a serious challenge to the ex-president and building a path to the GOP nomination that does not even seem to exist? The other thing to keep in mind, the Democrats have been trying to trash Trump from the very night he was elected. From the very night. The, quote, mainstream media, or as I call it, state-controlled media, went after him with knives that very night. Normally, when a president is elected, there's, quote, a honeymoon period. But they were so angered and disappointed and looking for a safe room with some coloring books because, my God, Hillary didn't win. And Hillary already probably had the safe room locked up with her own coloring books. She was saying the same thing. My God, I didn't win. Because that night on the election, every major network had their people standing up against the Electoral College count and the states and the blue wall, saying that Trump can never break through that blue wall. They were worried that he would actually win more of the popular vote. But it's the Electoral College votes that count. Well, it went exactly opposite. Trump did break through the blue wall. He did get the electoral votes against Hillary. And Hillary claiming, I had more popular votes. I should have won. That's not the way the Constitution works. And you're a lawyer and you should damn well know that. And she does. But it wasn't fair. Hillary has her view of fair, and the rest of us have an entirely different view. And she has since continually said, I would have won, I should have won, I could have won. And then, of course, they create the Russian collusion plot and all that fake material and put it out there just trying to destroy Trump even before he can really get into the office. I mean, they were trying from the beginning. And they've been accumulating all that, and it all fell flat. And then the Hunter Biden laptop surfaced when he's running against Biden. And they got the FBI stepped in and said, hey, don't anybody touch that story. It looks like Russian collusion again. There never was any Russian collusion. Now, as I've been emphasizing in commentaries throughout the day on the station, we have a cage match set tonight between Florida Governor DeSantis and California Governor Newsom. Now, they're not facing each other in a primary nor a general election. So why? That's coming up.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
I think this is a high-risk event for everybody involved. I think Ron DeSantis expected to be much higher in the presidential race against Donald Trump, so this has now turned into something that might have been risky, where he has everything to lose, where maybe if he pulls off a great debate here and defends his record, he'll actually come up a few points in the presidential race. Newsom, he doesn't have much to lose here. He's not expecting to get Fox voters to vote for him no matter what. On the other hand, if he can slay Ron DeSantis, that's going to put him in a great position in the presidential bullpen, which is really what he's interested in getting.
That's the evaluation of Mark Penn, a Democrat analyst, as to how he sees this match go tonight between DeSantis and Newsom. I'm sure some of you a moment ago when I was listing the viable candidates and I didn't throw DeSantis' name in, you got upset and say, Larry, you're forgetting DeSantis. I didn't forget it. It's just that as much as I like what he's done in Florida, And I would like to see that same blueprint for the rest of the nation. I just don't think he's going to be able to pull it off. So that's why I didn't bother including him, which is something else. Now, talking about Gavin Newsom, I sure don't want California blueprint across the nation. But there's a report here showing Gavin Newsom, who has defended California's homelessness crisis, now is embracing a controversial policy change. It points out in this piece by Politico, Governor Newsom trying to finish the job Ronald Reagan started more than half a century ago, seeking to transform California's mental health system, even if it means forcing some people into treatment. That's the idea. Get those people off the street and put them into state hospital beds, 25,000 plus or more. Get them off the street. So he's changing his policy, maybe. Well, he certainly changed it in time to make the streets look good when the communist Chinese leader came to San Francisco, didn't he? All right, so you heard Mark Penn and his analysis of basically Newsom has nothing to lose, and if DeSantis can hold his own, he might look stronger, even though he's not facing anybody that he would face in the primary election, much less if he got to the general election, might not be Newsom. Well, let's get another view, this time from former Arkansas Governor Huckabee.
Well, it is to his credit that he's willing to do it, because a lot of people simply would say, no, I don't think I'm going to be treated fairly. I think you will treat him fairly. For DeSantis, he needs the boost. He needs to be able to show that he can get on this kind of stage, because he hasn't been on a stage yet in the debates in which he just walked away with it. So his numbers have not moved. They've, if anything, declined since he first got in. He needs a boost, and especially with Nikki Haley now getting the nod from a lot of the mega donors, which frankly may be more helpful to Ron DeSantis than hurtful. I think it's a great opportunity for both of them.
And again, Huckabee was talking about, obviously, how Newsom, why would even go on Fox Network? Well, and Huckabee even kind of acknowledged in a conversation with Hannity that a lot of Republicans are even afraid to go on your and deal with you on your network, which made Sean Hannity feel very good. So anyway, that's going to kick off at 8 Central Time tonight, just right after we finish our next hour coming up. And the debate is going to be held in Alpharetta, Georgia. It is not going to feature an audience in attendance. They're calling it a debate. I'm not sure if it's going to be really a debate or not, but they're billing it as the Great Red versus Blue State Debate. Now, that makes sense. You're talking about your blue policies versus the red policies. There's not a lot you can do to defend the blue policies. Not when you look at the prices in all the blue states, the homeless crisis, the crime, the indifference, the attitude that, well, as long as I'm protected, I don't care about anybody else. But Sean Hannity will basically, quote, moderate the debate for 90 minutes, and then he will have live reaction with a panel of guests for about 30 minutes afterwards. And again, it's going to be on Fox News Channel, simulcast on Fox News Radio. Hannity says he's going to be looking at a variety of issues in each state: the economy, the border, immigration, crime, inflation. Anybody hear anything I just say that says, oh, that'd be a blue state win? They can win on the issue of economy. I don't think so. Border, no. Immigration, no way. Crime, no again. Inflation, well, if you fudge the numbers, you can come up with something. And they will try, believe me. Coming up in the next hour, I told you we're going to tell you more about a CIA officer who was more than glad to fly the PLO flag after October 7th. And we've got a lot more for you. You don't want to miss it. And remember our pledge: one nation under God.